Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Pete Musto and Anne Ball will have this week's Higher Education Report. We will also bring you a story on one of America's national parks. And later, Anna Mateo will present this week's Words and Their Stories. But first, here is Pete Musto.
Ahmad Elashwa has learned a lot in his time as an international student in the United States. Elashwa, who is 23, was born in Beirut, Lebanon. He is part of the second generation of his family to be born in Lebanon. Years ago, his grandparents moved there from the Palestinian territories to escape violence. But life was not always easy in Lebanon. Elashwa says his family and others like them often face difficulties. He says the Lebanese government limits employment for people it considers refugees. Also, he says the country's education system needs more money to support high-quality schools. So after completing high school, Elashwa decided to look outside Lebanon for a way to get a college education. In 2011, he decided to attend Bridgewater College in the American state of Virginia. He wanted to earn an undergraduate degree in physics at the school. Elashwa says his education started on the day he arrived in the United States. While traveling to his new school, he missed one of his connecting flights and arrived in the middle of the night. He had no idea where he was and was unable to contact the person who was supposed to meet him because his mobile telephone died. Luckily, Elashwa was able to contact a friend of a friend and find his way to his new home. But he says he learned a lot about how to react to an ever-changing, almost frightening situation. And every day after that, for the next 4 years, was a learning experience.
If these things are going to happen, you definitely have to plan in advance for a worst-case scenario.
Elashwa completed his studies at Bridgewater College in 2015. In addition to his college experience, he loved how much he learned about surviving so far away from home. And so, that same year, he decided to continue his education at the University of Vermont. He is now seeking a master's degree in mechanical engineering. Formed in 1791, the University of Vermont is a state-supported public research university with about 12,200 students. The school is in Burlington, Vermont. National Geographic magazine called Burlington a top adventure town. It is just an hour away from Lake Champlain, which offers many activities for swimmers and bicycle riders. Elashwa says he is happy he chose to complete both degree programs at U.S. schools because of the different things each has required of him. He notes that at the undergraduate level, students have more freedom to take classes about subjects that do not directly relate to their main field of study. Many undergraduates change their field of study one or more times. Also, schools want these students to make new friends and become involved in interests outside of their studies. El Ashwa says delaying his arrival in the U.S. until his graduate level studies would have been a mistake. He feels he would have faced greater challenges had he waited. He says his English skills were weaker before entering Bridgewater College, and he would have found the culture more shocking. In graduate school, El Ashwa says students have to be more self-directed. They must spend more time on research and guiding themselves through their studies, not having professors make choices for them. Graduate students are much more independent than undergrads in many ways, El Ashwa adds. For example, he got help paying for his undergraduate studies from an organization called the Hope Fund. This group raises money for Palestinians who are seeking higher education in different countries. But for his graduate studies, El Ashwa had to find a job as a teaching assistant at the University of Vermont to help cover the costs of his studies. This is common for many graduate students at American colleges and universities. While learning to deal with all this responsibility, El Ashwa says he would not have had time to learn even the simple necessities of living and studying in a foreign country.
Jade Zung is an example of an undergraduate international student who has tried to learn as much as she can from her experiences. Born in Nanchang, China, Zung says that, as a girl, she always wanted to come to the United States. Her mother made many American friends through her religious group. Some of them helped her learn English. In addition, Zung says she watched lots of American movies and television shows. So when it came time for Zung to choose a university to attend, she and her mother began reading reports that rated U.S. schools. They soon learned of the University of Vermont's strong study programs and beautiful surroundings. So Zung moved there and started working on a degree program in business administration in 2015. Ever since, Zung says she has looked to every difference in experience between the U.S. and China for even the smallest lesson.
So when I was in China, I thought salad is just the mix of fruits, right? But when I got here, it's like raw vegetables.
In addition to her business administration studies, Jade Zung takes all sorts of other classes. She loves the German language almost as much as she likes speaking English, so she has taken several German classes. Also, she has a strong interest in insects. So not only has she taken several classes on insects, but she has also helped form a beekeeping club at her school. This freedom of choice is something Zung says she would not have had at a university back home. But Zung argues the biggest lessons she has taken from her experiences have come from the different people she has met. She remembers being shocked in her first year when she met someone who is transgender. This means they do not identify as their birth sex. Zung says she had never met a transgender person before and thought this was strange at first. But over time, Zeng and the transgender student became very good friends. Zeng says this experience taught her not to judge people based on the way they look or how different they may seem. And she and Al-Ashwa agree that that attitude is very important to the culture of student life at their school. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Six years after its release, John Lennon's classic song, Imagine, is formally getting a co-writer, his widow, Yoko Ono. The British musician first gained worldwide fame in the early 1960s as a member of the Beatles. The group officially broke up in 1970, shortly after Lennon married Ono, a Japanese singer and activist. By then, Lennon was already writing songs of his own. Perhaps no Lennon song, however, is more famous than Imagine. The song was released in 1971. It called for peace during the Vietnam War and urged people around the world to live in unity. In 2011, the magazine Rolling Stone named Imagine the third greatest song of all time. It wrote, "John Lennon wrote Imagine, his greatest musical gift to the world, one morning early in 1971 in his bedroom. His wife, Yoko Ono, watched as Lennon sat at the white grand piano and virtually completed the song." That story, however, changed at a National Music Publishers Association event in New York City. The association honored Imagine with its Song of the Century Award. Its chief executive, David Israelite, also made a surprise announcement. He said Ono would officially receive credit as a co-writer of Imagine. John Lennon himself said in a 1980 interview with the BBC that Ono played a role in writing the song. Lennon also said that not including her as a writer was selfish on his part. I'm Dan Friedel.
Woodrow Wilson, America's 28th president, established the National Park Service in 1916 to protect the wild and wonderful landscapes in the United States. But it is an earlier leader who is considered the father of America's national parks. In 1906, Theodore Roosevelt, America's 26th president, signed the American Antiquities Act. The law permitted him and future presidents to take immediate action to protect important cultural or natural resources. The Antiquities Act led to the creation of many of the 413 sites within the National Park Service today.
No president has played a bigger role in protecting the country's natural and cultural resources than Theodore Roosevelt. During his time in office, he established 5 new national parks and 18 national monuments. In all, he protected over 93 million hectares of public land. He became known as the conservationist president. Roosevelt's concern for the land and environment came from the time he spent in the Dakota Territory, beginning in the 1880s. The area where he traveled is now the state of North Dakota. Today, you will find a national park there named in his honor. The park protects badlands, wildlife, scenic views, as well as 2 ranches where Roosevelt himself once lived. Welcome to Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Theodore Roosevelt came to Dakota Territory in September 1883. He was a young married man from New York, where his political career was just beginning. He came to Dakota in hopes of hunting huge animals called bison. He also had a great interest in the Western frontier lifestyle. Roosevelt soon developed an interest in raising cattle. Cattle ranching in Dakota was a big business in the 1880s. Cattle fed on the land's healthful grasses. He and a partner entered the business. Roosevelt invested $14,000 to build the Maltese Cross Ranch. Roosevelt returned to New York while workers constructed the ranch. He resumed his political duties in Albany, the state capital. But in early 1884, he experienced 2 great personal losses. His mother and wife died of illnesses on the same day, February 14th. Roosevelt described the pain and loss in his diary with only 1 sentence: "The light has gone out of my life."
Roosevelt again headed west in the summer of 1884. He sought to escape the reminders of his recent losses. He arrived at his newly built Maltese Cross Ranch. He also decided to build a second ranch in a quieter, more remote area. He called that ranch Elkhorn. Roosevelt traveled between New York and Dakota, working both as a state lawmaker and a cattle rancher. In late 1884, he helped form an organization in Dakota to help protect ranchers' rights. In 1885, Roosevelt published his first book about his experiences as a rancher and hunter. In it, he predicted that the cattle industry of the Dakota Badlands was not sustainable. In other words, it would not last. Roosevelt was right. Severe weather struck the area in 1886 and 1887. In the winter, a terrible freeze killed many cattle. The animals that survived the cold soon starved. Roosevelt himself lost over half of his cattle. He decided to get out of the business. The experience, however, shaped Roosevelt's beliefs about the need for conservation in America. Those beliefs, in turn, helped shape his policies as president.
Visitors to Theodore Roosevelt National Park can experience the Badlands just as Roosevelt did hundreds of years ago. They can also visit the Maltese Cross Cabin, as well as the Elkhorn Ranch area. The park has three main areas: the South Unit, the North Unit, and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. In the South Unit, visitors can drive along the Scenic Loop Road. It offers many places to see wildlife and the surrounding Badlands. Badlands are very dry places with little vegetation. Wind and water shape Badlands mainly through erosion. The process leaves behind high, flat-topped hills of clay and other soft rock. Many visitors stop to look at Painted Canyon. It gets its name from the colorful exposed rocks there. Trails near the canyon offer visitors a chance to see animals, from the huge American bison to small black-tailed prairie dogs. These animals are not really dogs. They are rodents. Roosevelt described prairie dogs as the most noisy and inquisitive animals imaginable.
The North Unit also offers several hiking trails. Some paths are short and easy. Others may take 2 days to complete. The Achenbach Trail is a 28-kilometer-long path. It crosses the Little Missouri River and takes visitors into the heart of the Theodore Roosevelt Wilderness. The third area of the park is the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. This is what Roosevelt described as his home ranch. He wrote of the ranch in this way: "My home ranch house stands on the river brink. From the low, long veranda, shaded by leafy cottonwoods, one looks across sandbars and shallows to a strip of meadowland, behind which rises a line of sheer cliffs and grassy plateaus."
Today, the Elkhorn Cabin itself no longer stands. Visitors will find only stone rocks where the cabin once was. The area that surrounds Elkhorn, however, is among the most beautiful, wild, and quiet places in the Badlands of North Dakota. It is this peace and beauty that appealed to Roosevelt after the deaths of his mother and wife. But the Dakota Badlands did more than just help Roosevelt overcome his pain. They helped shape the kind of president he would later become. In the words of Roosevelt himself, "I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota." I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
Now, from VOA Learning English, it's time for Words and Their Stories. This program explores common expressions in American English. Today, we explore a word that does not sound very pleasant: gut. In the medical world, guts are the internal organs of an animal. It's a person's stomach, or the part of the body that contains the stomach. So that's medically speaking. But in our everyday conversations, guts mean many different things. In the United States, if you bust a gut, you are laughing really, really hard. so hard that your stomach starts to hurt. If you haven't busted a gut in years, maybe you should. It feels good to have a really good laugh. Now, just as our guts are inside of us, the inside parts of a machine are sometimes called guts too. So if you gut your computer, you take out all the pieces inside that make it work. That's right, gut is also a verb. You can gut something like a fish. This means you remove its internal organs before cooking it. You can also gut a building by removing everything from the inside. My friend who renovated her house, for example, gutted the entire structure first. The most important part of a business deal or a piece of legislation can also be called the guts. And if you gut these things, you remove all the important parts. For example, you could say that after the council member gutted the legislation, it wasn't going to be nearly as effective. Now, let's talk about you. Within you are all your important thoughts, fears, dreams, feelings, and secrets. If you spill your guts, you share these things with other people. It's an informal saying, but you can use it when talking about any situation. If your best friend has a date and shares all the details with you, she has spilled her guts. Perhaps at work, a coworker spills his guts when he tells you that his bossy personality actually comes from a deep childhood fear of failing. When spilling your guts, be careful. Remember, once you say something, you cannot take it back. Now, if you strongly dislike someone, I mean really, really hate them, you can say you hate their guts. You hate everything inside them. This is a very harsh statement and sounds a little childish. You know, if you think about it, all those internal organs are important. They may not be pretty, but they keep us alive. So guts can also mean some really great things. For example, the word guts is an informal way of saying bravery or courage. It takes guts to make a very difficult decision. Let's say you want to move to a country where you don't know anyone and don't know the language. You want to make a big change and take a chance. Your friends who have lived in the same town all their lives say, "Wow, that takes a lot of guts." For right now, they don't have the guts to make such a big change. This is where we get our expression, "no guts, no glory." This means that if you do not have the courage to take a risk, you will not be able to achieve a goal or success. It might be scary, but you know in your gut that it's something you must do. Used this way, gut means a strong feeling about something. We can also use gut as an adjective. For example, your gut feelings are not based in logic or reason. Let's say I'm your best friend. When I hear about your plans to move away, my gut reaction is to ask, even beg you to stay. But my gut also tells me that this is something you must do. So I tell you to listen to your gut. Go chase your dream. After a year's time, I finally get the guts to do the same thing. We meet in Paris and then move to Russia to live for a year. As we say, no guts, no glory. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.